So the quote at the top of your order of service from Joseph Campbell, if you can see your path laid out in front of you step by step, you know it's not your path. Your own path you make with every step you take. That's why it's your path. Our own path that we unfortunately don't have laid out before us step by step. We're creating it every step that we take. The title of today's service is Journey and Migration. And these journeys that we are on often have us migrate to lands that we might not have ever imagined. And today's sermon is really three stories about three people and their journeys and the way that they ended up migrating to places they would have never anticipated. One of them is my story, or pieces of my story. One of them involves a church steeple, and one has as a central character OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So you're probably a little intrigued about those two other stories. But first, mine. So mine is a story of clear intentions, dreams that I held fast to, and following that in directions I would have never imagined. So I was someone who from a pretty young age had this some called idealistic vision of what my career could be and what my romantic life would be. So I dreamed of a fulfilling career that would be meaningful, would make a difference, and wouldn't really feel like work, but would feel like something I would want to do regardless of whether they paid me or not, although in my idealistic version, they paid me a lot. And I had this dream of a lifelong partnership with someone who would be my intellectual, emotional, and spiritual partner, and I wouldn't settle for less than that. And at one point, my father really did sort of wonder if I was ever going to get married and thought I was really perhaps being too picky. I remember at a Halloween party when I was in my 20s, someone doing some sort of tarot card reading or something and saying that it would be at least a year until I would find my beloved, and I was crushed. Little did I know that I wouldn't get married until, was I actually 40, honey? Yeah, I think I was over 40. Anyway, it was way later than a year after that woman told me at Halloween. So I lived in Atlanta, and I was pursuing my career dream by leaving the corporate world and creating my own little consulting training company called Conversation That Matters. And I had dreamed of this for a long time but not done it. So I was actually implementing it. I was at a creativity conference and met the man that you all know as my husband, Adam, who lived in New England. I lived in Atlanta. This seemed crazy, and yet we talked on the phone every day, and ultimately I actually moved to New England. Me, a Southern girl, raised in Little Rock, Arkansas, Dallas, Texas, and spending most of my adult working life in Atlanta, Georgia. So this tender Georgia peach moved to New England and found the relationship that I had always dreamed of, and it was totally worth waiting for. And the benefit of doing that, one of the many benefits of moving to New England, was that I finally went to seminary. Because I had dreamed of being a minister, but it didn't really seem feasible or possible. And someone said once, if you can not do it, don't. So I thought, I cannot do this. So I didn't. But then I got to Boston, visited Andover Newton Theological School just to take a little class for fun. And it was done. So a long-held dream of going to seminary came to fruition because I lived in New England. And then, of course, I didn't go to seminary just for fun, but to become a minister. And Adam and I dreamed of going west. He had lived in Boulder in the past. I loved Colorado. We thought west. We looked in the system that says the church is in search. Nothing in Colorado. But this place, Ashland, Oregon. Whoever heard of that? Not me at that point. Not a Shakespearean person yet. That still lies in my future, I'm sure. So had not heard of Ashland, but we clicked and read and thought, this sounds like it could be really wonderful. So here we are, Pacific Northwest. Who would have imagined? And it is a dream come true. This wonderful congregation, this amazing community, this size town really seems to suit us, although we are grateful for Medford and Target and Costco. So, again, who would have imagined someone who couldn't really keep straight Oregon, Washington, which one went on top? Here we are in Ashland and thrilled to be here. So mine is a story of, you know, thinking I had the step-by-step planned out, but discovering where those steps would lead me in unusual places, literally, geographically. Who would have imagined? This next story, it takes us to Louisiana, the next two actually do, and it's a story of love and marriage. Judy Williams and her husband Michael Williams have been married for over 30 years. It's kind of a long story that we won't go into that many details, but it involves a rocky marriage because of alcoholism, a solid marriage because of recovery, a really rocky marriage because of reentry into active alcoholism, divorce, complete separation and living apart, remarriage, as Michael got sober again, and Judy discovered things that she had taken for granted that she really missed about Michael. So, remarriage, a year of this remarriage, so this kind of renewed honeymoon time, and sometimes we can never imagine things that could happen. So in Shreveport, Louisiana, Michael is driving home in his car. It's stormy. This is about almost exactly a year ago. Very stormy. And he's stopped at a stoplight in the middle of downtown Shreveport. He looks up and sees the stoplight, which are normally vertical, horizontal, swinging. He's like, whoa, I hope that doesn't fall on my car. Not realizing that as he is saying that, a 100-foot, 10-story, 6-ton steeple is actually falling on his car. This steeple crushed his car. The first responders called in to their chief saying, you know, this is bad news. There's a fatality. And they're going to the car, assuming this is a fatality, until Michael lifts his head and says, get me out of here. He survived this incredible accident. It took an hour to get him out. He had over a dozen broken bones in his body, including two vertebrae. So vertebrae, that means a broken back. So not able to use his hands, his arms, flat on his back. Who could have ever imagined? And Judy and Michael talk about how this has actually brought them so much closer and in so many ways has been a blessing in their life. Like we heard in the White Horse story, who could imagine that this would be a blessing? But he said to her, as she had to do all kinds of delicate, normally private things for him, because he's on his back, can't use his hands, and he says to her, how can you stand this? And she says, it is a privilege, because I can only imagine if you weren't here, I would give anything to serve you in any way. And she continues to hold that experience of gratitude and appreciation. And yes, does he still go on too long sometimes, talking and in what used to be a really irritating way? She's like, yes. And I think if he weren't here to go on and on talking, would I give anything to hear this long, drawn-out, repetitive story? Of course. She says that she realized as she was walking a labyrinth, which many of you know there's a labyrinth here in Ashland to walk near the Episcopal Church, that she came out of it with this recognition that all life is a gift. And that has been so transformative for her. So we can imagine moving into a victim space. The church whose steeple actually fell on them has not been going into a kind outreach kind of space, but into a more withdrawn protective space, perhaps at the advice of legal counsel. And she could be really bitter about that. And not to say she's not sometimes angry about it, but she recognized that if life is a gift, that we don't really, you know, deserve anything. It's just a gift. So they're living in that sense of appreciation out of this tragedy that no one could have imagined. Our third story is a story of career. We're still in Shreveport, Louisiana, actually. Linda Anthony is a woman whose family owns sawmills, and she's the fourth generation in this family. Now, normally it's the men in the family who go into this business, so she never imagined that she would. But in the 1980s, she actually was invited to join the company. Very capable person because she was in the family, and she was so capable, she came in at an executive level and started to learn about the business and see issues and problems and be in these executive committee meetings where they would discuss things. And in one meeting, they were facing $1 million worker compensation insurance premium, which seemed kind of high to them, and they were concerned about this and worried about this, but, you know, assuming they had to do it. And Linda said, well, why don't we work on safety so that we can reduce that insurance premium? And they're like, whatever. This is like the lumber mill industry. Of course, you know, things aren't going to be so safe. She's like, we could have zero accidents. Zero accidents. Are you crazy? Well, yeah, can you go work on that? So she felt sort of anxious about this. What have I done? As you all might have recognized here at church, sometimes when you have an idea, you're the one who gets to go implement it. And at the same time, she was so excited about this idea of creating safety for their employees. And so she decided to start at her brother's plant in Texas, thinking, of course, he'll be open to this. He's my brother, not one of the cousins who's more distant. And so she goes and she does a tour to kind of see what the state of things are. And she's quite horrified to discover that out behind the factory, there is an outhouse, not an ancient relic. An actual outhouse, still in use. And she goes to her brother and says, this is embarrassing and illegal. And he says, I don't care. I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to spend money for bathrooms. She discovers that the forklifts do not have brakes. She's like, how do you stop them? We put them in reverse. So she's pretty intimidated by this task that she's facing, and yet she's determined, really determined to do it. Not getting support from the top, you know, lip service. They're not believing she can do anything. So she decides to talk to the actual employees. For 1 year, she visits every week asking them to share what's going on, but they're too distrustful to do it. A year in, they finally start telling her what's really happening. She promises them confidentiality, and she starts to make changes, and they see that it makes a difference, so they keep talking. She goes to executive committee meetings and reports lowering accident rates. At the same time, she's not getting support. There is one uncle who literally screams at her, curses at her, before he storms out of the meeting because he refuses to listen to her presentation. She says that she's not sure how she did it, but she would then stand there, give her presentation, and go to the ladies' room and cry. And that she cried many times in the car coming home from her brother's plant. But over years, they are OSHA award-winning. They had zero accidents last year, two accidents this year because of employee error. But zero accidents are possible. Their insurance premium is now a little over $100,000 versus $1 million. Now, you might think the story is over here, but it's not. Linda kept wondering to herself, why would I do this? People said to her, why did you do this in the face of all this opposition? And she came to realize it came out of her childhood. Because tragically, in her childhood, she suffered sexual abuse at the hands of babysitters, not at the hands of her family, but not protected by her family. She, of course, didn't tell her family. She felt so secretive and shameful and didn't know what to do, didn't have a safe place to go. So she came to connect these two things. The creating safety for these employees was what she had needed. A safe place to speak up was what she had needed. And so that's what gave her this determination, this drive to make this difference. She now gives presentations at OSHA conferences where she shares this whole story that I've shared with you in more detail with more safety information. And at the end of her presentation, she shares this piece about the sexual abuse, which she says she could never have imagined that this was her darkest, deepest secret. And hiding it and keeping it inside drove her to perfectionism, to overwork, to overexercise, to all kinds of things that were not good for her. But as she has been willing to share it, she has experienced a new freedom. And as she has experienced those negative feelings, those difficult feelings of anger and fear, terror even, she's also discovered new levels of joy and contentedness and just aliveness that she couldn't have imagined were available to her. She took the step to actually share this, assuming that, of course, I'm going to share this at an OSHA conference. No one's going to ever speak to me again. They're all going to probably run from the room. And the exact opposite happened. People were lined up to talk with her after the presentation. People at the conference continued to seek her out, many of them telling of similar experiences in their childhood that they had never connected to their own commitment to safety, to providing safety for others. So this woman, who at times considered killing herself because she was so despairing over the shame that she carried from her childhood, has transformed that to contributing to others, to bringing it out into the light and to making it safe for others and helping others connect how this longer arc of our lives can play out, how sometimes our deepest wounds can create our most significant gifts. And she's modeling how this is possible in the unlikely realm of OSHA safety in sawmills. But it's making a difference in all of those employees' lives and now throughout the country, the people who are hearing this presentation, seeing that it's possible to make a difference and doing so. So each of these three women, me, Judy, and Linda, have ended up in places that we would never have imagined. We've migrated to new lands that we wouldn't have planned, and yet we're so grateful to be where we are, each of us, in very different and distinct ways. So one thing that Linda said is that she no longer lets the circumstances of her life determine her experience. So whether you believe that everything happens for a reason, or whether you believe that it's up to you to wrestle meaning out of whatever happens to you, my hope is that wherever your journey takes, whatever land, however unexpected it might be, that you will find yourself home there with a feeling of fulfillment and gratitude. And now we will join together and sing Blue Boat Home, a favorite of mine, and I hear of this fellowship.